This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is the Enterprise Wrap, sharing with you a repeat of our favourite weekly shows along with a sneak peek of what to listen out for in the coming week on the Enterprise Belt. My name is Off Newting, together with Tasha Fusil.
Yes, and starting with our Careers Unusual repeat, and this week we're playing the fourth episode of the Final Touch series, which looks at all the different kind of careers that exist in the bereavement industry. So pretty interesting stuff.
And it's a very well titled as well. It's called the Final Touch series.
Our producer Angeline Tay came up with that, so props to her.
Not surprised it came from Angeline. But anyway, last Friday, Jermaine spoke to Feng Yi Leong and Wu Siu Yan. Both of them are grief counselling consultants.
Which I think is a pretty important role because, I mean, grief, how do you handle grief? You know, it's not something that you learn to deal with in school. I mean, if you've had to experience it from a young age, yes. But if it happens for the very first time, how do you approach grief?
Mm. Are these like grief counselling services offered by the bereavement care centre, or is it like a service that people have to go out to seek for?
I think if you are soliciting the service of a place like Xiaoen, these are the kind of additional or
it's all part of the kind of thing.
It's all part of the process and part of the experience. As you'll find out, Jermaine speaks with Yi Leong and Siu Yan, and they have pretty interesting conversations about what kind of emotions and reactions come up as these family members or loved ones are experiencing the grief.
So take it away, Jermaine speaking to the grief counselling consultants.
This whole month, we will be focusing on the Final Touch series, brought to you by Xiaoen Group, as they believe in educating, enlightening and empowering the audience with the various significant roles in the bereavement industry. Today, we have Feng Yi Leong and Wu Siu Yan, grief counselling consultants on the show.
Hi, Jermaine.
Hi, good afternoon.
How long have you been in this career? And prior to this, were you counsellor in other areas?
I have been here for about 4 years. We are very new in this industry, so we consider ourselves as a toddler in this industry. Previously, I worked as a lecturer in a local college.
And I actually have been here at Xiaoen also for 4 years. Prior to that, actually, I used to be a medical social worker and working almost, I think, approximately 12 years. So 12 plus 4 is almost 16 years in this career. Yeah.
Okay, this career of counselling. So what is counselling in the funeral or grieving moments?
Okay, when you're talking about grief counselling, this is a professional support service, okay? Which means we need a specialist to accompany the bereaved people so that they can deal with their own grief and loss, yeah? It's not an easy task. In fact, this is a very difficult job for people to support with them because like our counsellor working in Xiaoen, every month, approximately, they need to handle about 40 cases per month. So can you imagine every day you come into office, you try to give a call to the bereaved people. You try to give a call to your customer. And even though they need to go down to the funeral hall and to support those bereaved people whom they lost their loved one.
When you're dealing with a difficult situation, how do you respond to that?
We have been facing different type of difficult situation. Yeah. For example, I witnessed some of the bereaved people, they are not ready to accept the death of their beloved one. Some even they tear apart the death of the certificate. Some of them, they keep yowling, they threw tantrum, or they keep on crying until they fainted. Yeah, so different kind of difficult situation, which means we need to well equip ourselves so that we can journey with them. That means we got to learn a lot and we got to digest and we know how to well equip with many tools so that we could accompany them.
How strong do you have to be mentally to handle such a task?
I would say that try your best to be human because we are doing work from people to the people. There are many people ask us, like, do you have any quick steps to deal with grief and loss? Do you have any instant ways to deal with the families? So I would say that we are humans. We don't have superpowers. So we are just being present to the people who need supports.
And can you share with us an experience, like the first experience in this field?
One of the experiences that always keep in my mind, long time ago, one young lady, the young couple had a quarrel in the midnight. And in the early of morning, they were in a cold war as well. But in the afternoon, the young husband passed away due to the heart attack. And before he passed away, he dropped the young wife an SMS and mentioned that, my dear, I will be back to home and have dinner with you. Okay? And actually, this is so sad. What I mean is, after the wife knowing that the husband passed on, because of the quarrel over the night, they don't really have a good closure, because in the Cold War, I mean for the last meet, when the husband depart from home, so they don't even want to talk to each other. Yeah. So it really lead the wife having a complicated grief. What I mean complicated grief over here is because the wife have guilt, self-blame, and a lot of expectation on herself. I mean unmet expectation towards the husband as well. So she keep ruminating the grief in front of me. She always show the SMS to me. She keeps saying that my husband say that he will be back and why he didn't want to go back to home. Yeah. This is a long journey. I don't believe that there is a quick step for us to get rid of grief. So we need to accompany them, build up a friendly and safer environment for them to keep on going, and lead her to create a new version of story. A new version meaning that I think maybe your husband already forgave you. He dropped you a message and telling you that he want to come back and to have a dinner with you. Yeah. If he was sitting over here in front of you, is there anything you want to talk to him? So we do an empty chair and to have a conversation with them, for them to have a closure. Yeah.
How do you gain trust, and how can you successfully counsel someone who's grieving?
Actually, it's very difficult to gain the trust. Very difficult. What I mean over here is not every bereaved people, they would like to unfold their grief in front of you, especially in our local community. Because we don't have a norm culture to talk about grief, I mean in front of the public, even though in front of our family. We seldom talking about grief and loss. So how we gain the trust? I always say to my colleagues, just go with the flow. Talk about the grief. If they don't want to talk about grief, if they want to talk about some other things, just go with the flow. Because we do have our phone support as well. We call our customer, even though after completing the funeral, we support them by giving 5 to 6 calls within a year. So we give them a call, have simple assessment, see whether they are well coping enough. So this is how we slowly and gradually to build up the trust.
And what was the most difficult scenario or situation that you have ever faced when you counsel someone?
Frankly speaking, to helping those parents who lost their young children is always my soft spot. Helping those parents and also the grandparents who lost their young children or young grandchildren is very difficult. When I journey with the parents, the young parents, I feel helpless and I feel hopelessness as well. Because we don't even have a chance to have live review of the disease. Let's say if someone elderly passed away, we can talk a lot about him or her.
Memories, yeah. Right?
Memories. Yeah. But losing a young child, we lost not only so-called zero memories, and we lost the hope as well. And we even lost a lot of projection as well. Yeah, that is a lot of losses. Not only
the child himself or herself.
Mm. Yeah. So whenever dealing with those young child, that is a very difficult. Yeah.
And so when you perform grief counselling sessions, do they need to come in for a few sessions, or is it just a one-off service?
If they are the external clients, they can just call up or just walk in to ask for the services. So we don't have any formal initial sessions, but then we just do some basic screenings through the phones, asking about, checking about the sleeping patterns, the eating patterns, and the functionality of the persons, like whether he or she can go back to work and stuff like that. So we try to keep it as casual as possible to make it like a very relaxing session with the persons. It's not so much like a professional counselling session that you have to sit in the room. But sometimes maybe it will take place in the a parlor, so we have our staffs. We will go down to the parlor to visit the families, to do extra things such as like doing the paper praying thing that we fold together, and then we have some chit chat to check whether this family is doing all right or they are just pretending to be okay.
Do you have a different philosophy of life after counseling so many people who were grieving? Has it changed your perspective about life and death?
I think maybe it's changed my philosophy of life. I mean, when I was a teenager or young adult, I always try my best to perform myself. I'm sort of perfectionist. I want to ensure myself that everything is in order, everything is in control. Yeah. But I think because over the periods of time, when I accompany so many bereaved people, and including the main losses of my family as well, I found that actually certain things you couldn't be in charge. You can't be in control. And how to deal with that? Respect, be humble, and surrender. Everything happened for a reason. I think maybe this is quite common when audience listen, oh, everything is for a reason. But this is really how I implement to become one of the main core value into my life.
What would be the requirement if someone would like to specialize in this area? It's not easy, but...
It's not easy.
Yes, what are the requirements?
I am very fortunate enough. So far, we have 4 counseling consultants working with me. Certain special quality, meaning they are genuine enough, they are humble enough, they are not task orientation, they are more human oriented, they know how to journey with the clients, they know how to sometimes when clients say no, don't come closer to me, and they do know how to respect. Yeah, so I think they got this kind of sense, yeah, and this is how I choose them.
How can you convince someone to take up this career and join Xiao'en in making a difference?
Although this is tough, I mean, this job is tough, it is meaningful. You will feel so warm when you see, you really empower your bereaved clients to move on their life. You feel so inspired when you see bereaved people, they found the new meaning of their life. And you also feel satisfied when sometimes clients give you some special gift, especially the greeting cards.
Right.
They show their appreciation to you. Yeah.
And that shows that they have moved on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how can someone know he or she would need to go for grief counselling, and how can they then approach Xiao'en?
They can check on their own three main things. One is the intensities, the functionality and the frequency of their own emotions, their behaviours and thinking patterns. What I say that if let's say I'm having some sleepless nights, you can check on your own frequency. How frequent are you not having enough sleeps, waking up in the midnights, and then check on the intensity, whether you are feeling restless every day or just 1 hour per day and stuff like that. So just check on the intensity, the frequency and the functionality of your own daily functionings.
How can they approach Xiao'en on that?
They can contact us via Facebook, a call to our care lines and emails.
Thank you for sharing, Fong and Yan.
Thank you. Thank you, Jermaine.
That was Fong Yi Leong and Wu Siu Yan, grief counselling consultants. And you've been listening to Careers Unusual, brought to you by Xiao'en Group. Knowing, caring, serving. Xiao'en Bereavement Care and Memorial Park is here for you in your family's time of need. Whatever your faith or culture, Xiao'en speaks your language, the language of love.
That was Jermaine B speaking with Fong Yi Leong and Wu Siu Yan, the grief counselling consultants. Up next, we'll be sharing with you the top three interviews to look out for this week on the Enterprise Belt, along with a repeat of Game Time Episode 15 with Jeff and Richard. Stay tuned, you're listening to the Enterprise Wrap on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Enterprise Wrap. My name is Ofni Ting, together with Tasha Fusil. If you just joined us, we're just about to share with you the top interviews to look out for this week. Starting with Monday's Open for Business, it's episode 8 of the ongoing Kopitiam Talk series, and we got some big names on Monday's episode. Dato' Sri Nelson Kwok from Nelson's. I'm sure everybody knows Nelson's, right? The corn in the cup. And David Chin and Brian Chin from Dave's Deli will be on the show.
It looks at franchising, which are the models that both Nelson's and Dave's Deli worked on, and how maybe feeling a little bit confident and feeling a little bit sure of your position in the market could be like a quick way to experience setbacks if you're not careful.
Yeah. Since Nelson's and Dave's Deli are big companies, right? So I'm sure there are a lot of stories about the right decisions and the bad decisions that they made and what the outcomes were, right?
Yeah, and also interesting is that David of Dave's Deli will be there with his son, Brian. So it's interesting to take the perspective of a second generation taking over the business.
Very excited to hear all the real-life business stories that they'll be sharing. So Monday on Open for Business at 10 a.m. All-star lineup, that one. A few hours after Open for Business on Resource Centre at 12 p.m., also on Monday, Kenneth Worsdale, the CEO of Extra Space Asia, will be on Resource Centre to talk about designing workspaces that would increase productivity.
Right, because you've seen what the Google offices or all these like big startups, the kind of office spaces that they have, and you can't help but get office envy.
Especially the pantry section.
The game section. They all got like, they have like
foosball.
I don't even play sports, but it makes me want to play sports when I see them have these like facilities.
But do you think that will increase the productivity or decrease the productivity?
I think that, I don't know, it'd be an interesting one. Probably in the excitement of it might just sort of like kick up the momentum and kick up motivation and productivity. Ooh. But who knows whether it'll last.
Connect a lot of sparks in your brain. Suddenly, you know, a lot of creative ideas will come. Never know, right?
Yeah, they do say that exercise is a good way to boost creativity.
Resource Centre, 12 p.m. with Kenneth Worsdale. And last but not least on our list, on Friday's Raise Your Game, we are going to be Breaking Busy
with Ali Worthington, who wrote the book Breaking Busy.
Yeah, so I'm sure all of us have heard our friends say that we're so busy, I'm way too busy for this, way too busy. But how busy?
Never mind our friends, I mean us.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're always thinking, oh no, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for that, I'm just too busy all the time. But if you actually sit down and take stock of how your time is being spent, do you know what you're doing? why you're so busy.
So we're going to break the habit together on Friday's Raise Your Game with Ali Worthington, where our very own Tasha Fusil speaks to her. We all break the habit of being busy together.
That's all we have for you this week. Before we go, here's a repeat of Game Time Episode 15. Until next time, this is The Enterprise Wrap with me, Tasha Fusil, and Othniel Ting on BFM 89.9.
This is Game Time Episode 15. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Richard Bradbury.
Hello, that is me.
It is a bit of a deja vu that we're getting.
It is just a little bit.
That feel. I have no idea what is it.
Don't know why.
Anyways, Uma Pagan spoke to Juan Hazmer. He's the lead game designer for Final Fantasy 15 in Square Enix. And yes, we do have a Malaysian in the heart of the Final Fantasy series. Now, personally, I'm not a big fan of the entire series, but I did play Final Fantasy 7 on the PlayStation 1. 15 years ago.
Yeah, so something like that.
It's been a very long time.
Yeah.
Were you any...
Yeah, I think I played 7. I think I played 9 and maybe 10. Mm. I was never really a huge fan, though. I mean, I kind of played it because everybody else seemed to be playing it at the same time.
Yeah.
Wasn't my kind of cup of tea, though.
Yeah, like, as I grew up playing, you know, Contra and, you know, playing those kind of games. Mm. More Western games, and that's what I was trying to say. It's more Western games that I was playing. And I first came across Final Fantasy VII through a friend. And, you know, it's something everyone was talking about.
Right.
And I was like, oh, what's this all, you know, what's this buzz all about? And I remember when I was playing it, there was a lot of, like, huh?
It's a guy with big hair and a huge sword. Is
the
what
hair.
It is.
Yeah. It's a very Japanese influenced kind of game, but it's one of those classic Japanese game that has gone global.
I think part of the appeal for it was, one, it seemed to be huge, and the soundtrack was great, you know?
Yeah, the soundtrack was really good. So I really enjoyed Final Fantasy VII, didn't follow up with the 8, 9, 10 and all that, and 15 is coming out very soon.
I can't believe it's 15 already.
15 is coming out very soon. Final Fantasy VII, the remake as well, is coming out for the PlayStation 4. But first, we need to know, you know, what's, you know, how does a Malaysian guy get into Square Enix? So, Uma, it's all yours.
So, Hazmi.
Yes.
Tell me, how does a Melayu boy end up the lead game designer of Final Fantasy 15? What's that like?
Well, you tell me. Well, seriously, you know, I was an indie game developer back in Malaysia. Back in 2006, I think. Yeah, I created my first indie game. And then, I thought to myself, you know, I want to learn more about the Japanese game industry because, you know, it's like a black box, right? Basically, we have a lot of game design books from the Western world, but none from the Japanese world. So I was very curious of how they make those crazy games in Japan. So what I did was I just saved some money and then, you know, had some courage and just flew to Japan. And I studied Japanese for 1.5 years with the aim to write a Japanese game design specification in Japanese. Then after that, I sent it out to many companies, and yeah, I got into Square Enix.
Hazmi, you just got on a plane. I mean, you didn't have a job lined up. You had nothing. You just decided to wing it.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, just study Japanese first, obviously, because a lot of Japanese companies here don't really accept people who don't speak Japanese at the time. So, you know, just study Japanese and see how it goes. Or if I don't get any job, then I'll just fly back to Malaysia. That was the plan.
All right, so tell me a little bit about your history before you became an indie game developer. I mean, what did you study? Was this something you always wanted to do?
Yes, I've always wanted to get into game design. Unfortunately, back in 1997, when I graduated from secondary school, there were no game design courses out there. So what I did was I want to implement games. So the closest I could get to was to study programming. So I entered APIT, Asia Pacific Institute of Information Technology. And yeah, even though the assignments that were given to me were all not game related, I just forced some game into it. Like, for example, they asked me to create a language learning software. So everyone was just using that typical, you know, gray Visual Basic interface. Well, I did a ninja game, and you have to defeat ninjas to study Japanese.
Fantastic. You know, that kind of thing.
Then after that, I went into advertising. So I joined this company called IF Interactive. Now it's called IF Isoba, if I'm not mistaken. So there I learned a lot of things, those things that you see in Minority Report, you know, that kind of interface and all that. I studied a lot from there. And then Then, yeah, back in 2006 or 7, I forgot. I quitted the company and I thought, you know, maybe I shouldn't be locked by client servicing. So I jumped straight into indie game development.
And very quickly, just tell me, what is the game industry like in Japan? I mean, it's such an old industry. I mean, gaming in Japan has been there. I mean, video games in Japan have been there forever now.
My goodness, where do I start? Because the cool thing about the Japanese game industry is there are many layers to it, you know. So we have the AAA games, right? So they are the guys who have a lot of budget and they have a reputation to make. And some companies like Square Enix, for example, we also publish games as well. We also create, manga, which are comics as well. And then we have these people who are, you know, for example, we can have bank tellers, right? So what they do is they just create games on the fly, and, you know, they just create games at home, and then they just sell it in this place like Comic Market, which is something like Comic Fiesta in Malaysia.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, so we have all, yeah, it's, I don't know where to start with this. And sometimes the indie game that the bank teller makes can be as popular as any of the AAA games out there. So it's really, really a huge scope.
So there must be already an innate interest in coding, in design, in that kind of development. I mean, I guess a lot more of the younger generation must be aware of how to do that.
Exactly. They were trained from young, you see. So if you just walk in the train stations in Tokyo, you will know that everything is very visual, right? So they have been trained from young to entertain people. So game, you know, creating games is just the next step after that, right? So it's very, very easy to get them into game design and art and whatsoever.
Now, to listen to the full interview with Juan Hazmir, the lead game designer for Final Fantasy 15 in Square Enix, you can just go on to bfm.my, and if you search for Final Fantasy, you will see two interviews, maybe three, two interviews, because one is that interview and two is this interview as well. Interview is basically about the Malaysian video game market, the potential that it has, the stumbling blocks that we're facing at the moment, and some of the really cool things that the guys at MDEC are doing. Our previous guest, Richard, Hasnul Hadi, he's on that show with Uma as well. He's the director of Creative Multimedia Division for MDEC. And so they'll be just talking about, you know, the Malaysian gaming scene. So if you want to know more about what's happening in Malaysia in the gaming industry, go and listen to that podcast. So early on, we mentioned that we're hooked on this one game over the past few weeks.
Yes.
The Division.
Yes.
And on Tuesday night, we had the first free incursion update, Falcon Lost.
We've received reports from the JTF indicating LMB movement in the Warren Gate water treatment plant. HQ are pushing to bomb the site, but this plant is vital for the recovery of New York. Falcon Squad was sent to scout the area, but they've gone dark. Stop the LMB before it's too late.
This is your first incursion, Falcon Lost. Incursions are deadly missions requiring cooperation, preparation, and a high degree of skill. Find the right strategy to destroy the strongest enemies and be rewarded with the best loot.
The next incursion is scheduled in May, titled Conflict. Richard,
yes.
Falcon Lost, it is possibly one of the biggest free updates to any game that I can think of. It is sort of like new way of, you know, doing games. You know, these days it's not just releasing a game and let it run.
Right.
You know, they make you buy a season pass. Mm-hmm, they've got you know, a few updates to tease you if you haven't bought the season pass. So this kind of changed the game a lot.
It did.
And it's credit to the developers, you know, Massive and Ubisoft, because they were listening to the community of, you know, what they wanted. One of the things that I kept screaming to you is like, I wish I could exchange stuff with you. And you can now.
You can now do that.
You can now. So there's a whole bunch of updates that's happened. We won't go through all of it because you just got to read through the patch notes. But what's been the biggest change for you in terms of the gameplay now?
Okay. With this new update? The biggest change for me has been the fact that it's much easier to obtain gold equipment. And it has been super easy for a lot of people if you were quick enough to jump on board before they hot fixed it shortly after the patch dropped. So that's the major update for me in the way that I play things. It's making me look at a more efficient way of upgrading my character. But let's quickly look at what's happened in the patch. As you say, Incursions is the first new map to be released for free. Essentially, it's a it's 15 waves, a 15 wave mob, followed by a big boss that you have to kill at the end. So you're in one room. It's extremely difficult from what I'm told. Your character has to be a certain level before you can even participate. And then at the end of it, you are guaranteed a high-end drop and possibly a piece of the equipment that is part of the new gear sets.
Yeah.
So the four new gear sets are Strikers, Battle Gear, Path of the Nomad, Tactician's Authority, etc.
Falcon Lost and future incursions will introduce new exotic weapons and top-of-the-line gear sets. Combine parts of the same gear set to unlock powerful effects. Each gear set is adapted to a different gameplay style. This update will add the possibility to exchange loot with members of your group and to take on daily and weekly assignments straight from Division Command.
So essentially, you've got a sniper, a medic, a nomad, and a machine gunner, right? So that's a big thing. There has been issues with the update. If you remember last time, there was a patch, a very quick patch. Some people who had crafted backpacks were locked out, and they couldn't get back in. Since this patch, a couple of known bugs are that some people who have been playing on the Xbox One platform have had their characters locked out.
Yeah.
They cannot get in. And that's one of the major issues right now. So the backpack thing seems to have been fixed, but this one seems to be something else. But what it has done majorly is that you would get to a certain point with your character. Let's say, for example, you were level 30, and all you would see in your equipment and your weapons would be level 30.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where you knew. It was gold, it was level 30, woo! But now, these pieces of equipment and weapons actually have a number next to them. So you know how good they are. So let's say, for example, you get two golds. One is a level 163, one is a level 180. You know the 180 is generally the better piece of equipment.
Yeah.
So that means I can trade, you know, my 163s with you and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that's made it really useful. In terms of gameplay, they've made it much more... Dark Zone focused, and I think that's what we wanted.
Yeah,
you know, they've said that the best pieces of equipment are available in the Dark Zone via PvP, player versus player, and when they drop these supply drops. So this new idea of a supply drop, it drops it once per hour.
Strategic Homeland Defense is also sending essential airdrops directly in the Dark Zone to assist Division agents. These drops are not contaminated, so you'll want to be the first to put your hands on them.
Supply drop claimed.
It's then guarded by a high-end boss, and potentially you have 100 people, depending on how many people are on your server, trying to get hold of this thing all at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of made it a little bit more Wild Westy, if you like.
Which is probably something that was missing when they first launched the game, because a lot of people were saying, like, you know, you get into the Dark Zone, it just feels too empty.
There's
nothing much to do, and most of the places that you go, you know, things were already looted, and you know, you can't get anything.
Yeah.
You just kill a few bosses, and you don't even get high end gears.
Correct.
And then you come out of it feeling like, you know, I just completely wasted half an hour
of
going into the Dark Zone.
Right.
Now it's changed because, you know, when I got the update, I went onto the Dark Zone, the first thing I did, and I got a whole bunch of, you know, really cool gold items. I think I had about like 7 or 8 gold items that I was like, ah, time to extract now. And during extraction, while I was waiting for extraction, I just basically got raided. And, you know, people come in pretending that, you know, hey,
they're waving.
Yeah,
they're waving,
they're buddies. And the next thing I know, you know, they throw a shot grenade at me and they just go all mob on me and they steal my stuff.
Right.
And I go like, no, you don't do this. And I spawn back, try to kill them, and I can't. And,
forget about it.
And it's really tough. And I guess that's what the Dark Zone should have been from day
one.
So
agreed. And it makes you think smarter about your placement.
Yeah.
But I think this whole robbing people of their equipment very early on, I think that will change because with the amount of gold drops that is happening now, everybody is going to have a whole bunch of gold drops, right? So there really will be no need for people to be stealing your stuff because they'll have their own. They'll just be doing it for fun most of the time now. But the other
I was being cheeky.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
The reason why actually they killed me, I have to be clear, the reason why they killed me was because I actually, you know, took one of the stuff
You stole from them. Are you surprised then that they attacked
you?
No,
it's been, well, it was by accident. So I joined a random group in the Dark Zone. You know, right. They saw me walking around. So two guys saw me walking around. They invited me to the group. I thought, hey, that's good. I joined them. One of them actually then died in a battle. And then I followed, you know, suit. I tried to save him. I died as well. We've both spawned back at the base. He, in between, just got, you know, distracted over something. My objective was just to go back and collect the stuff that I dropped. Mm. I accidentally picked up the stuff that he dropped when he died. And I realized, hang on a minute, I did not collect this item and it's a really good item. So I should go and extract it now. And I went to extraction zone. They kicked me out of the group. They came to extraction zone, waved at me as in like, bye-bye. And, you know, and they just went rogue on me. So, but it's fun. It's added something to the game. It makes you think about, do you really want to do this? Like, is this really the best way that you think you can get this item?
Right.
And if you are tough enough, if you're a tank, for example, if you got really high DPS skills, then yeah, you might be able to, you know, go on and be all gangster in that area. You can try to kill me, but you can't, kind of thing.
Right, right.
But like for me, I was very low level, and you know, I was playing against two people who were like easily 190 and above, and I was 160.
So you needed Mr. Rich at that point, right?
I needed a Mr. Rich at that point. Now the problem is still that it feels like especially with the new mission that you mentioned about, you know, the 15 waves of attack coming on, it's just, you know, making it more difficult in the sense of they're just throwing in more enemies for you to shoot.
Right.
It's not adding anything extra for that single player mode. You say that it's a lot tougher. Yes, it's a lot tougher, but it's just, you know, if you have a better equipment, you can get through it. And it's just, you know, the more bullets you spray, the more better it is.
Right. And so let's address that, because what Massive are doing, they've, as we know, they've made changes to the way in which you craft items as well, right? They've made it much more difficult for you to craft items, and they've kind of balanced that by giving you better drops. So they're kind of assuming that you will use crafting your items as a secondary to the drops that you're getting, right?
Yeah.
So they're Massive have been quite smart about it in that they're trying to adjust the player base to move onto a long-term plan. Whereas we've been so used to getting new equipment and expecting to be high level very quickly. And it's the wrong way of looking at it, because this game, you know, it's not just an RPG game. It's an RPG shooter game. And you essentially have two crowds coming to play this game. They have me and you who come from an FPS background, and they have other players who come from maybe Destiny and are kind of aware that you have to do this grind mode to get better. And so I think what Massive have done in some ways is that they've addressed the vocal minority, which is me and you.
Mm.
You know, it's like, we want to get through quickly, we want to get it finished, and so they've addressed that, and I think it's the wrong way of doing things. Mm. And it's kind of made me rethink, well, maybe I shouldn't have the highest end gear at this early on into the game. I mean, if we're looking at DLC that's not dropping until May, some even in December, you know, it should take you that long.
It should,
to get that good equipment. And I know it's frustrating for those of us that want it here and now.
But build on it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, take your time with it. And I think that would make a much more enjoyable game. But as you mentioned in the previous show, you've said that you find it a little bit repetitive.
Yeah.
There can be that. And I think they've, by including these daily assignments, so, you know, go and clear out this particular area of New York, or, you know, craft this many items. They've kind of, it's almost like giving a carrot to a donkey. You know, we're giving you an extra little bit of something to make you feel as though there is more content.
Mm.
But it's not something you have to go out of your way to do.
Yeah.
It feels as though you have an achievement when it says, okay, you need to kill 40 cleaners, and you've done it. You're like, oh, I get a free piece of something.
And that's exactly how I felt when I was playing through a couple of missions, and, you know, suddenly you're saying, it's like, oh, you've completed one daily mission, which is, kill 40 LMBs.
And you get that little, oh,
really?
Ooh.
Really? Well, yeah. Wow, I did. And you get a gold item for that, and you get a few Phoenix credits for that as well.
Yeah.
The thing that I still lacks is the story.
Agreed.
I know they do try to add in, like, you know, now we've got the incursions with Falcon Lost, you know, it's a bit of a different story. Well, it's a continuation of a story. Mm-hmm. And then later on, there will be more updates. But the story is something that I've got, you know, I don't care about the story at all.
You see, if you were like coming from a Destiny background, you would have collected all of your kind of intelligence pieces.
Yeah,
you would have watched them
I
all,
would have. Yeah.
And you would have been engrossed in the story.
Yeah, even if I see like a phone, you know, at the side of the road that I can discover and pick it up, I just don't. Like, because for me, it's like my mission is to just, you know, be better than Richard.
And, right.
You know? that's the only reason why I'm still playing, you know, the Division is because you are a higher rank than me.
Right.
And I'm like, I wake up, you know, 4 hours before you do just because I want to, you know, catch up with
you. Okay.
That's my drive. So I'm not quite sure what will happen once I've passed that, once I've become a certain level. And I'm like a tank, you know, walking around, you know, streets of Manhattan, and you know, no one can touch me. I can kill anyone. I can be a bad agent, just go into the dark zone and kill everyone that I see, just for fun, like you mentioned,
right?
Doing it just for fun. So I'm not sure how long that is going to stick me to the game. What I would really like to see is just that you own the character in sense where your character is very unique to you and how you build it. And I understand there are elements to it, like, you know, but you can't seem it's very flexible, you know. At one point you can be this, another point you can be that. You know, I would like it to be a bit more fixed in that sense, where I own this character. I want this character to just be, you know, a very skillful character. Like, I can regenerate stuff very easily. My pulse is amazing. No one has a better pulse than I am, unless he's focusing his character on that build from day one. Right?
Right
now, you can switch around, like, you know, because you use different equipments you can, you know, equip yourself with. And like, it'll be nice to, you know, if I were, for example, if let's say you are a stranger to me and I see your name, Richard, and you know, I go like, ah, this guy was the one who killed me a few weeks ago. I'm going to invite him and like, you know, Richard, meet me 5 p.m. in Times Square. You know, we're going to have a shootout. And,
right.
You know, I would love to invite these kind of battles as well, because then I think it feels like I own this character. This is me in the Division world.
Right.
Right now, it feels like I'm playing a character in this game. I would love to really get into this game and feel like this is Jeff Sandu in Division.
I got you. I think in some ways they've tried to address that with the new gear sets, right? To a degree. So like you say, you want some character who can regenerate quickly. They have that with the tactician, but it's not yours.
You know,
there is somebody who has that same outfit and one thing or another. You're right. Even little things like, you know, being able to take off sunglasses.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to once you've created your character at the beginning of the game, that's what you're stuck with.
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice to be able to do that. I mean, you can change your clothes and things, but maybe I want a haircut.
Yeah.
You know, little things.
Or maybe I just look scruffy after, you know, seven days of playing, because it tells you how many days you've been playing as well.
I don't even want to get into that.
It does. It does tell you. So anyways, I do like the update. It is, you really should, if you're a player of any shooter games or, you know, RPG kind of games, and you have the Division, the season pass is a no-brainer for you. I think you really should get, because they are keeping this game for, it feels like it is for the long run.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, this few updates that's coming out and that's it. It feels like they're building for more than just that. You know?
It does feel like there's an awful lot yet to come.
Yeah. This has been Game Time episode 15 with me, Jeff Sandu, together with Richard Bradbury. Have a lovely afternoon and also enjoy the games that you've been playing. Hopefully you go and get Division, and you know, if you do see us walking around in the
dark zone,
join us, kill Richard, then join me, because I need better gear than him. This is enjoy the games, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.